Zuckerberg and his family will control Meta and their billions of users for all eternity. That's the company that you have to be worried about. This company, you will not need to, because the original owners are going to keep their stake. So Jeff Yass, I think my friend Brad Gerstner, Altimeter has a very public position in the company. I don't know how large it is. So this cap table is going to have, it looks like, you know, dozens of people on it. It will be a fully diversified company, and then a large amount of the shares will be floated publicly, which is why all these people are making this investment. They're not making this investment to control the asset. They're making it because it's a great business deal. This is the one company that challenges Meta's supremacy, and will continue to do so. YouTube would be the other, right? Just if as the world moves to video and shorts. And so you have to ask, who loses here? The big loser in all of this is Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg now has a viable, scary competitor.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by Stripe Startups. Stripe Startups offers early stage venture-backed startups access to Stripe fee credits, expert insights, and a focused community of builders. Apply today on stripe.com/startups. Public. You take investing seriously. Public does too. Build a multi-asset portfolio and earn an industry-leading 4.1% APY on your cash with no fees or minimums. Learn more at public.com/twist. And Squarespace. Turn your idea into a beautiful website. Go to squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code TWIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
All right, everybody, welcome back to This Week in Startups. With me, my co-host for today, our editorial director, Lon Harris. Welcome to the show, Lon. All right. What's our top story here, Lon?
Give us our top story. I think we should definitely talk about Trump's H-1B visa concept and where he might have gotten the idea.
Really? Here we go. Well, I'm followed by Lutnick and J.D. Vance. I got a couple of followers. Sachs. A couple people in the administration know Jacob.
You've got some connections. Like you've even had friends tour the Oval Office, I've heard.
I did. I was there. You didn't notice it, but I was holding the camera. The cameraman got sick. He suddenly had food poisoning. So I was like, don't worry, guys. I'll just hold the camera. And, you know, I was quiet. I didn't ask any questions.
Can I just say, on a personal note, I was watched that video go viral in waves. Like I saw when All In first posted. I'm talking about there's a video of David Sachs, Chamath Palihapitiya, Dave Friedberg, Jason's besties from All In, touring Trump is giving them a tour of the new Oval Office with all the gold fixtures and appointments. And at first it went viral from Trump fans and All In fans. Look at our boys got this exclusive White House tour. And then it died down for a few days. And now we're in the second wave of Blue Sky discovering it. Like, look at Marie Antoinette dining while the people starve in their golden Oval Office.
We're in the golden age, folks.
Yeah, we're in the gilded age. It's like a whole second wave now of people criticizing it.
Gilded and golden, two different things. We are in both, in fact. There is a gilded age occurring. There are people with incredible wealth who are living a lifestyle. And of course I'm talking about myself, Uber $100 today. So I'm out of here, folks.
From your mansion in Newport,
my retirement show. But the golden age, you know, is worth taking a moment on. We are still, you know, even though unemployment ticked up just a wee bit, like 5% or something, we're still at an all-time low of unemployment for a lifetime. It's not evenly distributed. And the stock market at an all-time high, and America's competitiveness in the globe also at an all-time high. I think, you know, despite like maybe some of the foreign relations stuff people might not agree with, and the tariffs and how we're doing foreign policy, you put all that together, still people want to park their money in America, and people still want to climb over the fences and take boats and swim here. I mean, we literally have so many people who want to come to America, and it's pretty far away from any other landmass. And one of the ways they want to do that is the H-1B.
Correct.
Now, I have been on H-1Bs for decades. Why? The H-1B program I saw up close and personal when I was an IT guy in 1990, 1995 period, right as I was starting my magazines and getting out of corporate IT, they always said the same thing, Lon. We can get people from India for 50% less, for 25% less, and we can lord over them the fact that we can bounce them in 30 days from the country, and they have their families with them. So these, typically it was Indian guys back then. I think today it's a range of folks. You might have people from South America
still,
as well.
I looked up the stats today. It is still majority, less of a majority than it once was, but you're still talking between 65 and 70% of the people on H-1B visas are Indian.
Okay, so here's what it is. India is now the most populous country in the world, 1.4x billion people. They just eclipsed by like 10 million people. And, you know, who knows if these numbers are exactly correct. China. And they don't have enough jobs there. And so there's a big exporting of talent from India to MENA and the United States. Even Japan has a big program now to bring in doctors, nurses, and healthcare folks because you just can't staff these positions. And Indian people have a great education system, an incredible work ethic, honor, detail-oriented, executive function, like I talked about before the show. Like, they're known for being incredibly industrious individuals. And so I'm making a sweeping generalization here about a group of people, but it's warranted. So it's a compliment.
And it's a nice one. But it's a positive one. Yeah, those are allowed.
It's a positive one. I hate to tell you, but overperforming versus peers would be the way to say it. And it is a competition between nations. What that's led to is so many of them want to come to America to make a better life. The H-1B visa program has been abused. The salaries are the lowest of the people working at these companies. It is not for high-skilled immigration in the majority of cases. It's an abuse system to get cheap labor and then not hire Americans who, I can tell you from being inside corporate America my whole life, the way leadership looks at it is Americans are lazy. This is what they say. This is not my opinion. Americans are lazy and they don't perform as well as their Indian counterparts. So if I can hire somebody from India for 25 or 50%, and they'll put in more hours, they'll work more diligently, they're more affable and more respectful, and they want to work harder. This is what I've been told, Lon, from the inside. Therefore, I proposed for the last decade on CNBC and on this very podcast, there's a simple way to stop this abuse, which is charge $10,000, $20,000 a year per year to have an H-1B visa. Now that would close the gap of trying to give these jobs to foreigners that are not skilled.
We have this clip. We have a clip from
a recent one.
Episode 2170. It's from less than a month ago, August 27th of this show. I have the clip ready. If you want me to share that, I will share my screen now.
By all means. Yeah.
And we can take a look at exactly what you said less than a month ago. Here we go.
Okay. Here we go. What did I say? The difference between what the person would get paid as an American and what would they get paid as an H-1B, and they should get audited for that. What are you paying the equivalent people at your company? And by the way, there's a $10,000, $20,000 fee for each of these. Not one time, Alex, per year. So then if it is truly a person of unique skill, Colin, this is some AI researcher who's got a PhD from Oxford and whatever, and you got to have them. There's only 20 of them on the planet. Great. Then you don't mind paying $20,000 a year. They're getting paid $200. It's $220. It's 10% more. You just said you can't find the person. So pay up. Oh, I was angry.
Yeah, a little fired up. Well, we had a guest who was complaining specifically about H-1B abuse. And so that's kind of the angle that we were talking about it from. And you were saying you were going to send this exact proposal to Vice President J.D. Vance, your good friend.
I did. I tweeted him. And we'll send this clip too.
They're paying attention because on Friday, President Trump announced plans to impose a $100,000 fee on H-1B visas. There's been some back and forth about the rules. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick originally claimed this was going to be, just as you proposed, an annual fee. But then the following day, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt clarified it is not, it is a one-time fee. It only applies to new H-1B applicants, not renewals, not current visa holders. And it only applies to next year's lottery cycle. 2025 recipients, they're free. They're using the old rules. This is only going to start next year. The $100,000, it's about $6,000 times the previous cost. So they're definitely making it more, you know, the companies have to go a lot further. They have to really want these people in order to pay. JP Morgan stated bluntly that the move, quote, prices out the utility of H-1Bs as a source of labor supply.
If you want your business to succeed online, it has to stand out, and that's why you need a beautiful, world-class website. The good news is you don't have to hire an expensive designer anymore, nor do you need a bunch of developers. No, Squarespace has all the tools you need to claim your domain and start building your company. Hey, maybe you got a product to sell. Maybe you want to show off some samples of your work. Maybe you've got a new service you're providing. Well, Squarespace is the all-in-one tool you need for your business to grow and flourish. And they offer beautiful templates. Maybe you want to start an online course, or you're scheduling appointments for people. Maybe you're generating client invoices. All of that is built into the product. Everything you create with Squarespace is pre-optimized to show up in search engines as well. So you don't need to hire some expensive SEO person. Nope. They're building your meta descriptions. They're setting you up with an auto-generated sitemap, and the SEO is done before you even get started. Plus, there's a new AI-powered feature. It's called Blueprint, which makes it easier than ever before to customize your website and make it really pop. So check out squarespace.com/twist for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/twist to get 10% off your first website or domain purchase. That's squarespace.com/twist. I don't know exactly what that quote means, but what I'll say is,
I mean, I think they're saying you would no longer bother hiring somebody. They're making it too expensive for this to be
good.
Actionable is what JP Morgan is.
Good. That's a good thing because now American companies will be forced to train people and create training programs. When I was coming up in the industry, when I was an IT guy, they gave you a training budget. They trained Americans for these jobs. And so there is a failure in our education system in preparing people for work in America. Our education system is completely disgraziad. I've said this many times. So then corporations need to pick up this slack. They need to have training programs. I created one in our venture fund, the launch fund, where we train researchers. And if they get to 500, 1,000 meetings with founders and they work hard, you know, put in 50, 60 hours a week, then they become an analyst. If they do really well there, do another 500 to 1,000 meeting with founders, they get their essentially, you know, if you think about Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours, you probably don't need 10,000 hours of anything to become an expert. What you need is really focused, concentrated effort, like and studied effort. And mentored effort. And so if you mentor people, they will hit these notes. But you have to have intense mentorship. Just like if you want to get good at basketball, you can just go play at the YMCA. Or after 1,000 hours of playing at the YMCA, if you did 100 hours with an actual coach, that would be more than 1,000. Right. So this is awesome. What they should add to this, and I'm going to add another wrinkle to this, is they should also have a parallel auction. They should auction off 10,000 of these a year. Each company should put in how many they want and how much they're willing to pay. So if you're OpenAI, your Grok, you know, your Gemini's, you know, DeepMind group, whatever it is, you say, you know what, I'm willing to pay $250,000 to get 1,000 of these. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you $250 million right now. All these companies are sitting on all this cash. They're not paying taxes. There's all kinds of tax loopholes for corporations. They have money offshore that they haven't domesticated, that's sitting in bank accounts over there, that tax hasn't been paid at. That's another issue. You just tell them, listen, you can take your foreign money from your, you know, subsidiary in Ireland that owns the IP for Facebook. So Chamath always tells that story, whatever it is. You can take that foreign money and you can use that to pay for this. What does it do? This is Trump's genius. I always call balls and strikes. I didn't like what happened to Jimmy Kimmel and how that went down with the FCC. I had a big, big discussion. We'll get to that in a moment on All In. We can debrief about that.
Sure.
But Trump does have a certain genius in saying this has value, pay for it. And he uncaps it. So every time I come up with something, I said they should sell citizenship. And I think I said you'd sell citizenship for $1 million. He made it five.
5 million. Yeah. The Trump card, the gold card.
The gold card. That was my idea.
Yeah.
And then I had this idea, 20K.
You have this opening to the administration. It's not that crazy that they might be lifting some of these ideas. I wouldn't say it's impossible.
Listen, it is what it is, folks. I don't care if my idea is like the 20th time they've heard it. You have a nice chorus here. This is one of the things I do like about this administration. You guys will hear me call balls and strikes all day long. Politics is a little bit outside the what is that word?
Purview.
Remit.
Purview. Remit works. Purview works. Either
remit,
way.
Purview. I'm working on my vocabulary with AI. The remit or purview of this show is startups. Well, this is something that directly impacts big tech and little tech. For small tech companies, I think every small tech company, a company under 100, should get one H-1B for about 10,000. So every small company gets one of these. One time, but for 10. Anybody over 100 employees, you've obviously got enough revenue. You've got 10 million in expenses, 20 million in expenses already. Then you should just be part of the strict lottery system.
The lottery, yeah.
And this is, or the auction rather. I like the auction or lining up and paying this. And I like the idea of people saying, I will buy 1,000 a year for 5 years and I'll give you 1.25 billion. And you can take that 1.25 billion right to the bank and cut down our deficit or put it towards education.
I mean, that is a great... I think that what you just added, I think so many of these revenue generating proposals from the Trump administration would go over better with a mainstream audience if they had that. Where is this money going to go? Because we don't really have, we're collecting this revenue, but they're not really telling us what they're going to then use it for. And I think that's a big part of the equation. How is this going to benefit the American workers that are being crowded out by H-1B visas? Are we going to put this into job training? Are we going to put this into unemployment systems? What are we doing with this revenue?
I think the thing we have to really start thinking about is for 1 year after college, having skills training available to any American in some format. So we already have, like, in most, I think, states, pre-K through 12, which means you're paying for 14 years of education. When I run for president, I'm going to, when president, yourpresidentjason.com, have the domain name.
Your favorite president.
Your favorite president to vote. When I run for president, you can clip this when I'm in office, you can put it in my face, take ownership of what I say and do in the world, as we saw this weekend. I can get to that too.
It's on the docket.
It's on the docket.
I got it on the docket.
Very simple. You got it on the docket. Very simple. Instead of paying for 14 years, we're going to pay for 16. Actually, we're going to pay for 18.
Mm.
2 years of nursery school that's enriched, like Montessori level nursery school, is going to be available for free to all Americans who make under $200,000 in household income. Easy, easy breezy. Then we're going to have trade schools. The trade schools will be run as a new organization, and each one of them will have $10,000 a year budget. Well, actually, $15,000 is, I guess, what you pay for on average in the United States per year of education. So you can make it doesn't need to be as much because it's trade school.
Right.
And it could be like 3 days a week of school, 2 days a week of apprenticeship. We just have to come up with that trade school policy that is run by states, funded by the federal government, and is available to anybody under, again, $250,000 in household income. And if you make above that, you just pay whatever the cost is.
Right.
So it's $15,000, you pay the $15,000.
There is that idea of the gap year, after you get between high school and college.
Everybody's taking it.
Or after college, you take a year off to travel. Or it would be like, I don't know why we don't use that concept. Like, take a year off after college before, before college, after high school. Take a year off and study something that's not connected to what you thought your career goal was going to be. Maybe you'll like it. Like, learn a trade, learn a skill. Just take that year. If you still want to go to college after that, great. But maybe you'll have found something. Maybe you'll have started working somewhere. Maybe you'll have found a new trade or something that you could, we don't give people that chance. Like, I was 25 before I was just like done with school and out on my own and like, hey, what do you want to do now? And like, that's too old. You should have given me a chance when I was 17 to ask myself those questions.
I'm going to write this up as like a little
I think this is a good
newsletter.
Idea.
The secret's out. Smart, motivated people are using AI tools constantly to improve their productivity. But isn't it time this incredible tech started making you money? That's why you need to go to public.com. They're not using AI as a fancy bell or whistle. It's baked into every facet of their app. We're talking automated portfolio insights, earning call recaps, and clickable summaries on every stock's performance chart. You can even ask the app a question about any stock in plain language and get a straightforward, direct answer. It's everything you need to build a multi-asset portfolio, including stocks, bonds, options, crypto, ETFs, and more. Plus, Public offers industry-leading yields, earning you 4.1% APY on your cash with no fees or minimums. Plus, for a limited time only, Public's offering a 1% match on all IRA deposits, transfers, and 401k rollovers. It's time to access the investing platform for people who take their money seriously. Go to public.com/twist to fund your account in 5 minutes or less. That's public.com/twist.
One more thing I want to add before we move off H-1B visas. There was a viral tweet from this University of Michigan econ professor, Justin Wolfers. I've got it here. I will share it with you.
This is an academic elite.
It's an academic, but he raises, I think, an interesting point. He looked at the actual...
I'll decide on how I frame him, if I agree with this point or
fair
not.
Enough. Go ahead. So he found a subsection joking. On the official White House announcement of the visa program. Here's what it says. The restriction imposed pursuant to subsections A and B of the section shall not apply to any individual alien, all aliens working for a company, all aliens in an industry, if the Secretary of Homeland Security determines in the Secretary's discretion that the hiring of such aliens to be employed as H-1B is in the national interest and does not pose a threat to the security of welfare of the United States. So they've basically written themselves a loophole that says the Department of Homeland Security can waive the 100,000 if they decide this is a special scenario. Is this, as Professor Wolfers asks, is this an opportunity for Trump to basically do what he always does, hold court, get people to come visit him and give him little treats and bribes and
consolidate more executive power, I guess would be the... Right. accurate way to say it, right? Just correct. Like tariffs, right?
Like he's the only way to get out of this. So if you want to not have to pay your H-1B employees 100K or want to have to pay 100K to hire them, you could go to Trump and do him a favor.
Very, very simple way to mitigate this is to have some transparency in the process. When somebody does not get their visa, it should be like, there should be an official process and it should be transparent. Then if there was abuse of this, you would have that. But Homeland Security, there needs to be some executive power in order to make changes that keep the country competitive. And so what I like about even just having this up front is we do have issues with spies. There were spies inside of Twitter from the Middle East. There have been spies inside of Google from China and other countries, Russia, et cetera. So you do have to be thoughtful about this. And there are multiple agencies that look into this. So I'm glad that there's a professor reading all these documentations and building these concerns. And sunlight is the best disinfectant in almost all of these. So that's what I just like to see is a little more sunlight on the process, which is, was my point with the FCC and Brendan Carr, which is an issue that we talked about on the All In podcast. It got a little spicy, but, I think right now, Glenn Greenwald, Joe Rogan, myself, Ted Cruz,
Karl it Rove, seems like Rand Paul, Karl Rove. Lots of people have spoken out. Yeah.
The Wall Street Journal. This is not an issue where it's like J. Cal is a lib. And I don't understand how people still try to box me into being a lib. I think it comes from Sachs constantly saying I'm a lib. I'm an independent moderate. If you don't believe me, what state do I live in? What do I carry on my hip every day? Just look at my tweets. I'm as moderate. And, even this week I talked about my faith, which I literally never talked about because I don't know, it's like personal and I've, struggled with it as somebody who grew up Catholic and I'm no longer Catholic, but I am Christian. And I happen to tell people I'm a Christian. This has freaked people out in a way that I didn't think I, would ever experience, but it's gotten kind of weird that people are like, you're a Christian. And I'm like, yes, is that a bad thing? Sorry. I kind of dig Christ and I just like the learnings. I grew up with it. I mean, am I not allowed to dig Christ? I'm not lecturing anybody else about it.
I only draw the line at the Tucker Carlson, you believe in angels and demons. That would take me aback. Other than that, I think it's fine.
I mean, that's part of, and I'll just unpack it here for a second, since everybody's asking me about this. I grew up Catholic.
Sure.
I was a practicing Catholic. I used to go to church every Saturday and every Sunday at 6 a.m. with my grandfather at St. Anselm's Church.
Catholic or Greek Orthodox? You were just Catholic?
I was Catholic.
Interesting.
I did go to Greek Orthodox sometimes with my grandfather on the other side. So my Greek grandfather, Greek Orthodox.
Oh, I see. It was the Irish
family,
side.
Catholic. So, tie goes to the mom, I guess, and these...
Well, in Judaism, for sure. Yeah, the ties go to the mom.
Tie goes to the mom.
That's
but
how
my
we
dad
do it.
Was running a bar and playing backgammon and poker, and having like a pretty, non-religious life in Brooklyn. So, I grew up Catholic. I didn't like the Catholic Church. I elected to not be confirmed because I had problems with it, gay rights, females' rights, women's rights. I just didn't.
We were
didn't
also,
speak to me.
You and I are of an age where the sudden discovery that so much child sexual abuse was going on in the Catholic Church was right in our lifetime. I mean,
correct.
When I was young, that was not a thing you ever heard about at all. That was not discussed. Yeah. I had no idea, not being a Catholic.
Interestingly,
I think a lot.
Growing up in the 80s, they told us stay away from this priest and this brother specifically because they knew that those folks were predators. And I was like, well, why are we going to church if there's predators here?
Yeah.
And they were like, don't go to the rectory, stay away from this priest. And
but
I'm
it
like,
was, it
that's
was
a
only,
very odd thing.
For younger people, they might not realize like how short a timeline that, like it was only the 90s when that movie Sleepers came out and we started hearing about the Magdalena laundry stuff in Ireland. It's very recent. It's very recent.
Anyway. I'm a Christian.
Sure.
There it is. I'm getting tons
folks.
Of Christians who are like, you won't talk about it. And I'm like, am I obligated to? I mean, I don't go to church, but I consider myself a Christian. It's a technology podcast. Okay, let's keep going.
All right. Okay, we've got some great questions from the audience about H-1Bs. So here, S from S-K-H-Y-D. C-Kide? I don't know. It's S-K-H-Y-D. They say, each H-1 has contributed millions to Social Security from every paycheck. What happens to that money?
Okay, there is people who have H-1Bs pay taxes and they pay into Social Security. That is a rare win for our government in retirement accounts. This also happens, I think, with illegal aliens pay into undocumented illegal. They pay into it. So sometimes you pay into something because that's the rules of the country and you don't get the benefit unless at some point you become a citizen.
Yeah, move
so
back.
So some number of people become citizens. The problem with the H-1B visa, and I think Lutnick brought this up or JD brought this up, and again, balls and strikes, like they're going to get some things right here, folks, even if you didn't vote for them. The thing they realize is people who are coming on H-1B visas, some of them were getting government subsidies, like, I'm not sure which ones. I don't know if it was food stamps or whatever it happens to be. But if they were getting paid such a low salary and then they were essentially getting put on the dole as well, like, shouldn't that be the company that, pays for it? And this is the problem with the low wage hack that people were doing. So
you also hear a lot about this the left, the companies like Walmart, McDonald's that are paying subsistence wages, and then a lot of their employees end up using food stamps, other kind of welfare benefits. And it's like, well, why? We should just make McDonald's pay people more so that we don't have to subsidize their employees.
It's going to be a big part of my presidential platform as well, which is we're going to add $1 to the federal minimum wage for like, I don't know, the 8 years of my presidency and get it up to 15. Globally, other people have $15, $20 an hour minimum wages and they have McDonald's and Starbucks. And when you get to $15 an hour, you're not raising a family on it, but you're also probably not going and getting food stamps. We saw this in, I think, Seattle, New York, and San Francisco, I think, all have minimum wages in the high teens, mid-teens to high teens now.
It's impossible to live.
They did it over time.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said it's impossible to live in those cities unless you make, 15 plus an hour. Like, you're going to die.
So, you literally would be close to homelessness if you had a $2,000 a month apartment. Yeah.
It's not possible,
It's just the math doesn't math. So I think that just the federal minimum wage would be like a nice thing. And if you really wanted to be smart, this would be something Trump would actually go after for his third term. He should just say, I'm going to raise the minimum wage in my third term and just troll the fucks. So just making a joke.
We got one more question, or actually I think this is more a comment, not a question, from Ronak S on YouTube. They agree about the 10 to 20K payout that you suggested instead of 100K, sure, which they feel is too much. They also suggest we should scrutinize consulting firms applying for multiple H-1B visas and prioritize international students. That would fix most issues. That's what Ronak thinks.
Busy founders working on early stage companies have a million important tasks on their plate. It's so important to not just prioritize those tasks, but quickly clear items off your to-do list by finding elegant, simple solutions. And that's what Stripe Startups is all about. You already know Stripe, right? Friend of the pod. You've definitely used them to make your purchases, and their intuitive tools and payment systems have been helping transform startups from ideas into billion-dollar businesses for years. Now they've got a complete program for startups that's going to help you quickly and effectively grow your business. That means free Stripe credits and a dashboard where you can easily track your performance, even your own customized payment and credit cards, all set up in just minutes instead of months. And they've got the tools that will help you launch any kind of company. Whether you're an AI startup looking to offer premium subscriptions or a SaaS concept that needs help with payments and invoicing, a marketplace onboarding new service providers, Stripe Startups has everything your early stage venture-backed company needs to get moving. So here's your call to action. Learn more by applying for the program today. Visit stripe.com/startups. Stripe.com/startups.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's so much abuse in the system. I don't know specifically what the consulting firms are doing here. But, you know, in some cases, what will happen is they'll just open an office in India and put the jobs there. And then, you know, you can accomplish a similar task in terms of spreading the work around without affecting U.S. workers.
That was a big argument I saw about the president's proposal with the 100K is that, well, isn't it possible these companies will just give up having U.S. headquarters? They'll just go somewhere else where you can hire a bunch of people cheaper?
No, they need these jobs need to be on U.S. soil in many cases, but some of the work that doesn't need to be will be there already. You know, a lot of times when you call IT support in a company, it routes to the office in Manila or in India, or, you know, wherever it happens to be. South America also coming on strong there, same time zone. So, yeah, these are all important details, and it's great that we're addressing them, because for too long we weren't addressing these, and it built up more and more abuse in the system and more resentment. And I think removing the abuse, creating transparency, and making it a revenue-generating arm of the government is long overdue. What else is on the docket here?
You want to talk about this Fox TikTok deal?
I think it's important because we're starting to get the contours of the deal.
Yeah,
right?
we're getting more detail. So on Sunday, President Trump was speaking to Fox News, and he suggested that Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch, the leaders of Fox News Corp, it used to be News Corp, now it's Fox, they may end up being among the investors in the new U.S.-based TikTok entity. Trump listed the Murdochs along with other people he said would, quote, probably be involved in the deal. That includes Oracle chairman Larry Ellison and another new name, Dell founder Michael Dell. The White House is now suggesting that the TikTok deal, it's going to be an executive order. That's how we're going to push it through. And it should be coming as soon as the next few days. The current plan,
great,
ByteDance is going to create a duplicate copy of the TikTok algorithm, which they will then lease to this U.S. venture that's coming together to sort of own it. U.S. users, in contrast to original reports, it seems like we won't need to download a brand new app. It's going to work with the TikTok app we already have on our phones. And the U.S. government is not going to have an equity stake in the new company like they do with Intel. Even though they've sort of helped broker the deal, the government is not going to be a co-owner of TikTok. So I think the big thing that the internet is discussing based on this is that it does seem like the lineup of TikTok owners is a bit of a who's who of Trump allies. That includes the Ellison family, now the Murdoch family in Fox News, and Mark Andreessen. It's a lot. It doesn't seem like a very balanced collective in terms of their political side of the aisle. Does that raise free speech or bias concerns for you?
No, because every single Democrat and former Democrat is now engaged, with the exception of maybe Reid Hoffman, in supporting the Republican Party. And so I've talked about this countless times, but Mark Cuban as well. Yeah, that's true. And he's not included here, but it seems like 9 out of 10 business leaders are engaged with the Trump administration. The Trump administration has gone to great lengths to court the business community and to listen to their needs. And that's something, as I said on Jesse Waters' show, the Democrats had the opportunity to do, and Obama and Bill Clinton used to do. So the moderate Democratic Party, which I, you know, kind of say Clinton was the pinnacle of and Obama was adjacent to and Biden went fully left or further left, they were super engaged with commerce. And so the Democrats during the last 4 years could have invited all these same people to the White House and had those kind of dinners and listened to their concerns and redid the crypto regulations and thought about all these things. And by the way, the Murdochs have been quite anti-Trump. That's been a big point of contention between Trump and Rupert Murdoch. So I would put him in the bucket of anti-Trump people or no longer fully throated Trump supporters. No, they've been very critical of him.
They had at times. I mean, I wouldn't say Fox News today is anti-Trump, but...
No, not Fox News. I'm talking about the Murdochs themselves.
Well, but that is them. That's the Wall Street Journal, the Post, yeah.
But the Wall Street Journal is like, if you were to look at Trump's statements, he really has been down on Fox News and on the Wall Street Journal,
properties. And I mean, the Wall Street Journal is the one that was publishing, you know, that birthday book and, you know, all this other stuff.
Yes.
It's not a binary. It's not a one-to-one. Rupert Murdoch's a complicated guy.
So, yeah. And Mark Andreessen, I think, was formerly, you know, Democratic, and his partner, Ben Horowitz, was donating to Kamala very recently. So what's happened here is, I don't have that concern. What I do like about this is it's a consortium. So if it's a bunch of people putting in $5 billion, $1 billion, $10 billion, whatever the numbers are, there's actually not one owner. It's going to be a fully diversified organization and company run by a board of directors. So in fact, there's going to be no God King. And if you want to talk about God Kings, you can look at Larry and Sergey and Zuckerberg. They have super voting shares and they control their company. So if you want to know who can act unilaterally, it's people with super voting shares, different classes of shares where they get 10 or 100 votes. Zuckerberg and his family will control Meta and their billions of users for all eternity. That's the company that you have to be worried about. This company, you will not need to, because the original owners are going to keep their stake. So Jeff Yass, I think my friend Brad Gerstner, Altimeter has a very public position in the company. I don't know how large it is. So this cap table is going to have, it looks like, you know, dozens of people on it. It will be a fully diversified company, and then a large amount of the shares will be floated publicly, which is why all these people are making this investment. They're not making this investment to control the asset. They're making it because it's a great business deal. This is the one company that challenges Meta's supremacy and will continue to do so. YouTube would be the other, right? Just if as the world moves to video and shorts. And so you have to ask, who loses here? The big loser in all of this is Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg now has a viable, scary competitor. The competitor known as Snapchat has never really had any kind of impact on Meta's supremacy here. So this actually, if you just look at it from a cap table perspective, which is all you have to do, you know, even if, you know, Oracle and Dell have been seen, you know, at the White House or making donations, et cetera, everybody's doing that. So that's like 95%+ of the industry. And this will be a very diverse cap table. So not worried about it.
All right. Fair enough.
We got
a pair of EU stories. You want to jump over to Europe and talk about what's going on in the EU?
Absolutely. Yeah. What's going on in the EU?
So Bloomberg had, go ahead.
Yeah. No. It's, you know, it's one of these things that we don't talk about that often because they have so little impact.
That's why I thought
except when it comes to, the only thing that really comes to mind is the only thing that they ever really have an impact is the Nordic countries releasing great companies and then everybody else trying to regulate companies. So that's their impact on tech today is regulation in the Nordics.
And just Friday, we had Anton from Lovable talking about Stockholm being such a great, so that's what inspired me when I saw two big Europe tech stories. I was like, we got to talk about it just because this is an ongoing theme of the show. So first up, Bloomberg has an interesting report on the rising demand for compute and power in Scandinavia. Data center power demand in the Nordic countries is expected to increase by 4x by 2032. By that point, data centers could account for 6 to 9% of total demand in Scandinavia for power. The reason is major players like Alphabet, Microsoft, and Meta are expanding their footprints in the region. And the reason for that, lower energy prices. Power in Nordic countries averages 60% cheaper than the rest of Europe. Parts of Norway and Sweden, it's as low as 80 to 90% cheaper. All that on top of ample land availability and naturally cooler weather. We do have a graphic here if you want to look at how much cheaper power is.
Yeah.
Let me.
Super interesting that power has become. Yeah, you can show that while I'm talking. Yeah, the it's very interesting how power has become the vector of success for this. So in the Middle East, they're going to have a lot of data centers. China using nuclear, and the Nordics, you know, do have a cooler temperature on average.
Plus, so geothermal power is a very big hydroelectric power. They've got a lot of alternate energy sources. A
lot of fjords, a lot of water flowing around.
Exactly.
And then Norway has some of the biggest oil reserves, even though they're not pulling them out of the sea. Norway has the largest sovereign wealth fund in the world. So you have rich countries. They're smaller countries, but they have great land mass. It's cool. This makes total sense. And this is going to give them a huge advantage because this means compute will be cheaper and cheaper for the startups there, and they'll be adjacent to it. And when you're adjacent to something, the collaboration goes up. This is what you see with the collisions that occur in Silicon Valley, Austin, Miami, New York, Los Angeles. Being in proximity to a resource can increase the collaboration with that resource, whether it's Hollywood or it's the finance district or the tourism or media stuff in New York. So yeah, this is going to be significant. They have to be somewhere there. And I would think France has an advantage here as well because they have such a pro-nuclear approach and they've have no problem building nuclear there. This is an opportunity for France to actually... They have a lot of land mass and they have a lot of nukes. So why aren't they, I wonder, playing a bigger role here? They should be putting data centers near their nuclear facilities. And man, that could be such a huge win for France. Maybe they don't have the wherewithal as a government to take advantage of the opportunity. I know they've been in a bit of a chaotic state.
We were sort of joking about it. The French government actually collapsed while you guys were on stage at the All-In Summit. So
yeah. So there it is, folks. I mean, what a fumble by France and Germany, which turned off, I think all six of their nuclear reactors were turned off because they were so overjoyed with their pipeline from Russia. And now that's gone too. So what a cell phone by Germany and France to not be collecting this, but this is where high functioning governments can do well. Small governments, Norway is what, 5-10 million people, and Sweden is like 10. I mean, the whole group is like 50 million people, and they have high functioning governments that represent the will of the people very well. And that's something, you know, the United States is at a disadvantage because we have 50 different unions, such a large landmass and such a disparity in how people look at the world. You have rural America, you have ranches, you got people who live in cities. The United States is very diverse.
We come back to this. Diverse. We come back to this a lot. The 50 state thing makes some stuff real difficult. You're all of a sudden now you're dealing with 50 different bureaucracies, 50 different ways of seeing. It's very hard to do something nationwide. Whereas in a country like Norway, 5.5 million people, pretty centralized, much easier to do, say, here's the new rule and everybody gets on board. I did ask Claude, why doesn't France have more data centers near their nuclear facilities? I got a really good answer. France is actually beginning to build data centers near nuclear power, but this is a recent development. French utility EDF is in discussions with three data center providers about supplying power for up to 3 1-gigawatt data center projects in France, and French data center operator Data4 signed a 12-year supply deal with EDF, making it the first data center operator in the country to sign a nuclear production allocation contract. So there
I know
you
why.
Go.
There's a blocker here. The privacy regulations and the red tape in a place like France are extremely high. So if you were to put a data center there, you then have to, in all likelihood, you buy into their privacy regulations, which are significant. And when you try to hold on to data for a long time, France has been known to, like, with the telecom companies, I don't think they're allowed to keep your phone records for past a year or two. You can ask producer Claude to check on that. But I remember reading that headline like 20 years ago, where the people in France were like, well, why do you keep my text messages? And you have my log of my phone calls. I have my lover on my phone. I don't want that to save. Why don't you get, and I'm going into my Italian accent, but they really care about privacy.
Back and forth.
And here's the thing with the privacy concerns. There's a very simple way to do this. If you look at the UAE, which is incredibly savvy, like one of the most savvy, and Singapore, these are incredibly savvy governments, and they will create a zone. So there's a media zone, a finance zone, there's a wagering gambling zone now in the UAE, where they will say, if you are in that zone, you do not have to obey the UAE's laws. So obviously, you know, gambling, alcohol may be against certain traditions in certain regions. So they just say, yeah, in this 10 by 10 mile area, you'll have a casino. And they're in fact building, you can ask producer Claude to pull this up as well, this amazing casino in one of the, I believe there's 7 emirates that make up the United Arab Emirates. You know, Dubai and Abu Dhabi, but there's 5 other ones. And one of the other 5 ones, which is about, I think, an hour and a half, 2 hours from Dubai, is going to specialize in having a casino. And I don't know if it's the Wynn or Caesars, but it's a major project that's opening next year.
Thanks to producer Claude, we have the answer. It's the Wynn Al Marjan Island is going to be the UAE's first casino. Wynn Resort secured a gaming license in the UAE in 2024. It's under construction now. It will be the first casino resort in the UAE. $5.1 billion resort they're building on Al Marjan Island in the Ras Al Khaimah Emirate.
It's going to be gorgeous, by the way.
2027. Look out for that.
It's coming
in 2027. So if you are ready to level up your AI collaborations, as you saw we just did, I want you to go to claude.ai/twist. You cannot do everything we just did without a paid plan, but Twist listeners get 50% off their first 3 months of Claude.
Generous.
Claude.ai/twist to get started.
Claude.ai/twist. Great. Thank you to them for sponsoring the show. Great
love
partner.
Anthropic, we use it and every I use day. Claude every single day,
deep,
folks.
Deep research. And it's getting faster and faster. It used to be like the deep research. You do it and go get a cup of coffee. Now you do it and it's like, bing, here it
correct.
Is.
When I first started, I'll tell the story. When I first started using producer Claude for the show, ChatGPT was much faster. And I would have to tell the host, I would tell Jason and Alex, give me an extra second or two. Claude takes a little while. It'll be a great answer, but it takes a little while. I don't have to take that time. As you saw, it's right away now. It's much faster.
So here's what France should do. France should say in the 100-mile radius of the nuclear power plants, they are going to do an economic development free speech zone, and that their laws will not impact the data centers located there. So if on those data centers, the team at OpenAI wants to keep, you know, the memory of, you know, your searches for 10 years indefinitely, and you've agreed to that, that would trump the local laws. That's how they can probably unlock this whole thing. So somebody send this to somebody in France. It's not a big deal. You just tell the French people, like, do you want to get a lot of jobs and a lot of income? And then just charge a tax for that. If you want to be in the non-restricted zone for AI, you just pay this certain minimum fee. It could be based on the number of GPUs. It's, you know, a small tax, 1% of the cost of it or something de minimis, but that, you know, the savings is so great, people can't do that. But you would never do this in a place like the UK.
because you know the government would then use it as a cudgel to try and get you to behave a certain way. I mean, they're knocking on people's doors in the UK, asking them about their social media posts and if they would like to apologize.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Things have gone, things have gone pretty far.
Yeah. Pretty weird. And that makes them a no-go for entrepreneurs. If any entrepreneur came to me and said, what country should I put my European, you know, outpost in? I'd be like, I can tell you which ones not to. Definitely Stockholm. Don't go to Germany. You would definitely want to go to Stockholm.
Yeah, that's what the number one would be, Stockholm, I think.
Yeah, I think so. All right, let's keep going.
One more Euro story while we're on the continent. The European Commission is considering amending the 2009 e-privacy directive. This was the rule that forced websites to get your consent before loading cookies. You know how every time you go on a website now, no matter where it is, you get that lower third, like, hey, do you accept cookies? And you have to accept all or reject. You know what I'm talking about. So this is all because the European Commission had this rule in 2009. And now it's basically polluted the entire internet. Everybody's sick of it. Nobody reads those things anymore. So they're revisiting this rule. They're going to come up with a different way. You can either opt out of it or just approve, accept cookies once in your browser. And then every website you go to doesn't have to like, hey, can you please consent to us leaving cookies in your browser?
That is so annoying. That it's
so annoying.
It's like,
yeah.
Well, this is the thing about regulations. You know, you make these regulations, and then if you make them beyond what users actually want, they will get annoyed. And conversely, if you do things that annoy users and you have dark patterns, like I always tell the story about the Wall Street Journal, like they're happy to take your money on their website and your credit card, but they won't let you cancel on their website.
Yes, yes.
And I'm like, okay. And when I asked the woman on the phone, why is that? And she said, well, we're concerned about fraud. I'm like, well, the fraud would be when I purchased it, not when I unsubscribed.
Canceling. Yeah. Nobody's like
you're saving me money.
A fraudster canceled my Wall Street Journal subscription for me. That doesn't happen.
That's not a thing.
No, so, they don't make money that way. That's not a good fraud.
So this is, I think, what the European Union is going to have to learn is if you overregulate, people are going to opt out. I said Figma should make it so their product is not available in the UK. We don't sell into the UK. We don't have employees in the UK. And we ban UK users from using our product because of what they did to them in terms of their sale. Could give up the UK. Who cares? It's probably less than 2% of their revenue and they're causing them headaches. So this is a natural process where you deregulate, you regulate, and the users eventually have a say. And that's, users very much underestimate their power in this equation. I saw a movement over the weekend where, and I got lots of these, where people were saying, I am unsubscribing, high profile people from Hulu and Disney, yeah, because of the Jimmy Kimmel thing. Now, I don't know if that's going to be 1 million people or 100,000 people, but that's a very interesting wrinkle in this debate.
And then just last night, they were supposed to have a carpet for this new Lilith Fair documentary that's coming out on Hulu. Mm-hmm. And Jewel and Sarah McLachlan were supposed to perform and they both canceled in protest of the Kimmel. Yeah. So Disney ended up canceling the entire red carpet because talent was pulling out.
Talk about a rock and a hard place. I would not want to be Bob Iger right now.
It's can't do anything.
You got the
right
affiliates, you got the administration, you've got celebrities and consumers.
People are mad at them because of Gina Carano. They're mad at them because of Jimmy Kimmel. They're getting it from all
she had such a great character too. Hey, I just have an idea here. Can we just let artists be artists and leave that out of the political discussion. Like I love Gina when she was on Mandalorian. I thought that she had a great character.
They had that whole show planned. They were going to do a whole show about her. And then when they fired her, there were Rangers of the New Republic, I think it was called. It was going to be about her and all the other, you know, they have all those like X-Wing pilots in the Mandalorian, like they're putting together. It was going to be about them, like the New Republic and their reassembling.
That
their
would have
military.
Been brilliant. And she was so iconic.
She was going to star. It was her spinoff from the Mandalorian. And then
I hate to give more advice here.
The name of that character, folks.
Cara Dune. I hate to give more advice. However, Bob Iger, very simple. You take Gina to lunch. You give her the VIP tour access. You give her a Club 33 membership. You say, listen,
We made a mistake. In hindsight, it was a mistake. We'd like to reboot your show. We'd like to reboot your show in the spirit of things. And then they go back to Jimmy Kimmel and they say, Jimmy, hey, you know, the comments felt a little insensitive. Some people were upset. Let's find a path to you coming back.
And, well, Kimmel has you said basically, he wants to come back there. Basically, and I'm piecing this together. It's rumors. But what it seems to be is that Kimmel will only come back if Disney's like, you can say what he's got a bunch of other Trump jokes he wants to tell. He's got a bunch of other stuff. And he's like, I'll only come back if you let me say whatever I want on the show. And they're like, no. So that's the back and forth that's happening right now. Kimmel does want to come back.
Here's the solutions to these problems. He's got X amount of time left on his contract.
Yeah, May 2026.
Perfect. Say, hey, we'll let you come back until 2026. We're obviously going to renegotiate. The show's a little bit underwater. You can go out in a flaming ball of glory or whatever. But if the affiliates don't want you and they do drop you, we're going to have to change your pay scale and the budget of the show to reflect that. And then we're fine with you being online or something. But give him like a path to coming back. But he has to also recognize.
Yeah. I mean, legally, they're tied to this contract. I don't think they can change.
Well, they
just
pay it off, right? It's not a big deal. But right. I think, you know, in terms of this reconciliation and trying to bury the hatchet in this country, which some people want to do, some people don't want to do. I get it. It's all very emotional right now. You bring Gina back strategically. So that would be making amends, because I don't think she should have been canceled. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what her tweet was, but I don't think any artist should really be canceled for their tweets unless it's like hate speech or something really
gnarly. I believe it was about trans people, and it was an ongoing string. It wasn't just one thing.
I mean, people.
But no, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that it was.
Artists can have opinions. Like, yes. By the way, I'm not looking to Disney characters for my morality. I'm not looking to comedians for my point of view on the world. I'm looking for them to be entertaining what they do in their own time. If they love Trump, they hate Trump. They love what the situation in Gaza is. They don't love it. I mean, I'm fine with people having differences of opinions, and maybe we can get back to a place in America and in the media sphere where people can have opinions on their own and they can do art. And we can kind of put those two things, you know, in two different boxes, unless they're criminal behavior or something. I don't know. Let's keep going.
All right. Let's move on. We got one more big tech news story about OpenAI and NVIDIA, or we can move on to some startup stuff, whatever you want. Dealer's
choice. I mean, the NVIDIA stuff, I can just tell you, you know, I saw the announcement and I saw the interview with them.
OpenAI and NVIDIA announced a strategic partnership. They're going to deploy 10 gigawatts to NVIDIA systems.
Yeah.
That's roughly 2% of total U.S. electricity consumption. It's basically the entire state of Florida's annual electricity use.
So what's happening here is, you know, they are trying to catch up to Colossus, you know, Grok and XAI, you know, they're building something very big. And I think people are starting to realize you need to build big things in order to, you got to have these like big data centers in order to maybe solve the next cohort of problems like curing cancer, understanding the universe. Like everything we've seen up until now, as impressive as it is not typically a new innovation, not original thought.
Right.
Sometimes on the margins, you can interpret a breakthrough. It's hard to know if that was random or brute force, but there's going to be another layer of this, of super intelligence, not just general intelligence. So this is all the super intelligence play. The theory is we're going to write better code. We're going to have better training data, but we're going to just put so much behind this that essentially everybody in the world is going to have an H100 representing them in the world, which means, you know, a billion, 5 billion H100s. That's a way to conceptualize this, is that every human is going to need to have a super intelligence partner, and they will. This is all incremental revenue to everything NVIDIA has done to date. And NVIDIA is making a big investment as part of this. And then over the weekend, I saw Jensen was in the UK and he made a huge investment in a self-driving car company. I think it was Wave, which is UK based. So the real story here is NVIDIA wins again.
Yes, Wave, WAYVE, Wave is the company.
And this company's doing incredible. And they're using that Thor architecture we talked about. So what
You have Waymo building a hardware stack. You have Elon and Tesla building a hardware stack. And then you have a hardware stack by NVIDIA at the same time. So NVIDIA isn't just content enough to give the back-end servers to people pursuing self-driving. They're building another set of hardware and sensors just specifically for mobility. And that's the big news here is Jensen wants to facilitate more customers. It benefits Jensen if there are many players in a space competing, not one. Why? Well, because then they're not dependent on any one company. And as we saw, Microsoft had been like, I don't know if it was 15 or 20% of their revenue. Everybody was speculating who's like customer
one. Right. There were those three companies that are like half of their revenue, and everybody was trying to guess what those three, Alphabet or Meta or, you know.
Pretty clearly Microsoft plus OpenAI is the big fish because that represented two players. But now you have OpenAI and NVIDIA collaborating directly to build data centers. That's a little bit of the fractioning of the relationship with Microsoft, I think. And them going it on their own with their own compute that they don't have to go to Microsoft to get at Azure. Okay, fair enough. And Microsoft, fair enough, is working on their own large language models as well. So the investments occurring here are significant. The Wave one, I believe, was $500 million. And did they say what this NVIDIA and OpenAI's latest round would be?
Let me pull it. Yeah, it's $100 billion strategic partnership is what they're calling it. And yes, $500 million was the Wave deal. NVIDIA intends to invest up to $100 billion in OpenAI progressively as each gigawatt is developed. The first gigawatt of NVIDIA systems will be deployed in the second half of 2026. So it's $100 billion over an extended period of time.
So what's very interesting about this and is going to become the next big debate is this round tripping where I give you an investment and then you spend it with me.
Correct.
So the accountants are going to be all over this. Jensen right. is very smart. He knows this, but this could lead the SEC. I'm sure the SEC has already asked them about it and I'm sure they've buttoned it up, but I'm giving you $1 billion this year. You're buying $2 billion worth of H100s. This is going to, you know, have to face some pretty significant scrutiny. The problem is when the investment and the round tripping is not justifiable. So OpenAI's got to buy these anyway. It's pretty clear. And NVIDIA's got a bunch of cash to invest. So they're going to own a significant amount. They're going to own 10% of, or 20%. If it was $100 billion, this doesn't make sense to me. These numbers need to be clarified. And we'll do that in an upcoming episode. But if they were putting $100 billion into the company and they just did a secondary of $500 billion, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that's like 20%. A huge investment. But I think they're blending numbers here.
Probably. I mean, it's also what the U.S. government does when we sell weapons to allies. We sometimes like loan them the money that they then use to buy the weapons from us. Like that's what Israel does a lot, you know.
It's called a loan lease. It happened in World War II, where the U.S. wasn't in the ultimate strong position. So they said to the Allies, hey, you can buy weapons from us, but we need them back. And then typically with the situation in Ukraine, you can have the option to get the rebuild contracts. So when you talk about the war machine and you want to be cynical, it's like, we're giving you weapons. You owe us the money for the weapons. And then we get to rebuild the bridges and the hospitals.
Correct. And get your rare minerals as well while we're at it.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like there's people who want to see wars in the world. I don't want to go full conspiracy theory here.
It's not almost like that. But okay, we'll save that for another
Somebody benefits from all of this. Oh, it's above my pay grade, folks. I'm just an angel investor and podcaster.
Yeah. We'll do that in our next show, Conspiracy Corner. We've spent a lot of time this episode on big tech. We've got a ton of startup news and little smaller stories. We only have like one or two stories, so I'll give you some choices. We could talk about Bill Gates' daughter's new startup. We could talk about Blue Sky getting more intense with moderation. We could talk about Howie releasing their first ad and closing their seed round.
Hit me with Howie.
Howie, all right. So Austin Petersmith, friend of the show, his AI secretary or AI executive assistant startup, Howie, made a few big announcements. They're now available to the general public. They've finished their $6 million seed round, and they have a brand new website, Howie.com, which I'm going to pull up for you right now, show it off. the people's secretary, they call it.
Amazing, amazing. I should have had him come on. He had texted me. We seed invested this. I guess we seeded it. I think we were the first investor.
You are listed among the seed investors here, correct, on the website?
I think we were the first. We you know, he came to me with the idea that he had a general AI idea around productivity. And I said, you know, I think I gave him 500K or 250K. And I just said, okay, great. Cause I had worked with him on Inside before. So I was just like, go for it. We'll seed it. And so as we don't usually do that unless we know the founder, and they made a great, I love these launch videos.
Yeah.
That
I was about
high
to,
production
I have the
value.
Ad here. If you want to take a look at the,
let's play it. Let's play ad, it for, yeah. And Howie is, just so people understand, it's like, it does meeting scheduling, like much better right. than Calendly, let's say,
right.
where people report that. And I have Athena assistants. So I'm thinking about getting my Athena assistants, Howie, so that they can be more productive, because a lot of what they do is scheduling. And what you do is you just say, hey, Howie, and you CC it on your email, and it just finds times and books.
And what I have noticed, because a lot meetings. Of the founders we book on the show use Howie. And what I found is a lot of people don't know that it's an AI. It's so natural. It's so good at using natural language. It's so efficient. A lot of people, I'll see these email threads of people be like, thanks a lot, Howie. Like they believe they're talking to a real human personal assistant, which does not happen all the time. So that's a mark in their favor. So here's the ad they put up for today's launch video.
It's time to bring back the secretary.
What?
Hold on. Hear me out. We're bringing back the secretary.
I like
not
act.
The job title, not the dress code.
Yeah,
none
I like
of that
the,
1950s bull.
Yeah,
but the poise, precision,
the prestige. Mm.
Someone else is managing my calendar.
You get a secretary.
You get a secretary.
You get a secretary.
No, I don't have a pen. I have a pencil.
No more triple bookings or battling for bio breaks. We're not scheduling meetings to schedule meetings about meetings that are soon to be scheduled.
Hi, I'm calling about the meeting for the meeting.
Thanks for setting the meeting.
It's a secretary for all of us.
Yeah, even secretaries.
Meet Howie, the return of the secretary. Things got a little crazy back there, didn't they?
Hmm.
There you go.
So it's a little spicy on the gender thing, the throwback. People don't like the term secretary anymore, like executive assistant. The secretary thing went out. So they're kind of being playful. I like it. I wonder if this was shot or was AI. That was the first thing that came to mind, because everybody's shooting these.
That's a real
that looked
lady.
Like it was shot.
That's definitely a real lady.
That's an actor.
Yeah, that's an actress. This is a set. I believe this is real. Yeah.
Man, what did this cost, you think? Because, you know, making a spot like this, back in the day, there was that guy Sandwich Media, I think. Remember that guy who was in all the commercials? And he was charging like $250,000 at the peak, I think, maybe $100,000.
Yeah, I feel
what do you
like
put
this
at now, today's?
I feel like this, it's got to be a few hundred K. I mean, just to pay the whole crew that had to be there, the editor, the director, the
I'm
talent,
not sure.
the makeup.
I think this is done for 10K now.
10K? Wow, that would be very cheap.
I think so, yeah. I think there, this set exists somewhere in Hollywood. The actress, I think.
Yeah,
they
but
get
you gotta
paid,
pay.
Like,
you gotta rent this set. They probably needed 2 days to shoot this whole thing. There's a lot of setups.
I wonder.
I mean,
it's pretty tight.
Production, as a rule, like you gotta remember, like every time they have to tear down and like reset up for a new shot, that's 20-30 minutes to get all the lighting replaced and move the cameras and. There's like three different teams. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'd be interested to ask Austin.
I also wonder, because I see people doing it themselves now. Like a lot of founders are just shooting them themselves because the cameras are so good.
Well,
you know,
Rahul
and the
from
templates
Superhuman
are there.
Did that really good one that we liked, where it was just him at his desk in his leather jacket, remember?
So there's that one, but that's not like a produced concept. With an actor, right? It's like him.
No, that was
talking
just
about
that
product.
Was just him talking about his a startup. Yeah,
I just feel like everybody knows production now. Like the mystery of how do you make a great shot has gone down, and I could see like some of these cut shots eventually could be done by AI, right? And so I think we're close to having. I think within a year or two of, I'll say within 2 years, you can do this level of production with AI. Yeah.
If a human is doing all the creative and it's just the production part that's left to AI, I mean, probably pretty soon. I
I don't think it's going to write it or come up with the concept.
Exactly.
I'm saying you get a smart person who writes it and has the concept and says, I need the pencil being sharpened. I need the clock ticking. I need this sound. I need the cup of coffee.
You could
I want the set to look like this.
You could probably do that already, and it would just look a little janky around the margins. We're like a year or two away from it being super polished.
Yeah, I love it. Right. I think it's great. And I wonder if these launch videos actually pay for themselves. And I think that's, you know, to just give some startup advice here, be open to any possible experiment in terms of marketing your product, especially if you have product market fit. So you got to remember, Howie's been around, I think, for 2 years, and he did it very slow, like Superhuman. He was very influenced, Austin, by the Superhuman experience. And he really onboarded people thoughtfully, made sure the product did one thing better than anybody else. He achieved that. And then whatever, I don't know, 2 years after founding the company, here he is. Actually doing the launch video and promoting it. So that's something to think about. Are you doing something very narrow that solves a deep problem that people have fallen in love with that has product market fit? That gives you the right to then go spend $50,000 on this and then spend $50,000 marketing it, whatever it happens to be. So I do think, like, be creative, folks. And Cluely did a really good job with this, getting far too much attention. And I think, I don't know if their product, like how the product's doing exactly. I don't hear people talking about using their product, but I hear people talking about their company. So I think sometimes, like, the company promotion can exceed the product. I don't know if that's the case in Clue, because I don't know the user base. But like I said, I hear people all the time using Howie. And then the marketing comes after all that's been built up, so that people who are using it get to feel like, ooh, they were part of something, right? As opposed to spending all this marketing dollars before you have product market fit. Make sure you have product market fit first, folks. That's my best advice.
Yeah. I think that's a thing that comes up a lot in Founder U pods and our Portco pods, is people who are like, all their ideas are about the marketing. And it's like, your product's not really ready for that yet. You know, like, I feel like that cart before the horse sort of situation comes up a lot. Do you want to do one more?
Well, there's another one.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, you know, there was another video from one of our portfolio companies that I haven't seen. Let's play it here. We'll
do a live reaction. This Aragon AI is, one. You want to check this one out?
Yeah.
All right.
I didn't know they did a launch video. Let's play it here.
Let me pull it up right now. Here we go.
You'll get my raw reaction to this. Have you seen it?
No.
The weekend was just within reach, but the asks don't care what time it is. Mm.
Okay, guy's pounding his keyboard, it's shaking. The room's on fire.
It's time to introduce a new way to work. Meet Aragon, the AI operating system for enterprise, a context engine that understands your business, learns over time, and delivers the insights leaders need to make better decisions.
Love it.
Can you send that to the management team?
I'm on it.
It's not just automation, it's enterprise reasoning at scale.
Okay. Enterprise reasoning at scale. So, you know, that doesn't have the production value of Howie's.
The room being lit on fire. That's some VFX. That probably cost him, you know, that was a little bit time to put together.
No, I think that was literally, I bet you that one was done for low thousands of dollars and was done in-house. I don't think that was done out of house. That's my guess. But I need to know the cost of these things, so let's find out.
I think they probably got a VFX company to do the room being lit on fire part. Mm. Otherwise, I don't think
it's the founder. That's the founder doing it, so I think that's his actual office and they lit it. I wonder if that's just, because it looks like it's cut. That could just be a stock image of something on fire.
That looks like VFX to me. I think they had a guy who knows that.
I think AI could do that.
Maybe.
I think AI is capable of doing that right now. And like the thing with the backgrounds is, like, when you see a set now, like I get fooled sometimes when I see people's Zoom backgrounds. So even Zoom sometimes at first glance, I'm like, are you in an office or you just take a picture of your office? Like, I have a friend who has a perfectly shot picture of his office that he uses as his background. And then people assume he's in his office. And I know he's not in his office.
A lot of people have that.
Because I know he's traveling, because I'm traveling with them. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. All right, great show, everybody. And thank you to our partners. And just quick shout out to our friends at Athena as well, who
we love
provide
Athena.
Me with my executive assistants. Go to AthenaWow.com.
AthenaWow.com, and they'll give you a couple of weeks off and just tell them your boy Jake Howe sent you. But you got to go to AthenaWow.com to get my discount, which is the best discount you can get. AthenaWow.com. I have two assistants, and I'm going to give them Howie, I think, this week so that they can be even faster. And those two assistants, I have them working staggered schedules. So when you and I were working on the weekend, we had an AI project we dumped to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like nice on a Saturday, Sunday to have support to just, hey, do some projects. And then I have them backfill. I have projects they can do without asking anybody. I have some research projects I have them do for the sales team, like SDR kind of stuff. And they do a great job of that too when there's no work to be done. Okay, we'll see everybody next time on This Week in Startups. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, folks.